Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I am the grizzled and tired Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. Gov, how you doing, buddy? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, so we...
It's been a couple of days since I shaved.
Yeah, and we said, I think last show we said, we'll see you next week, thinking full well we were going to shoot again, and then we're both busy.
Oh, yeah.
And then, we were supposed to shoot on Wednesday, but it's Friday, and we're very happy that it's Friday. So I get to work all weekend. All right, so let's get started here. The first one is, how do you password protect a folder, just a single folder in Outlook? This is my own question. And what I was wanting to do is just take the emails that I would want to have password protected and have them in a folder that when I click on it, it asks me for the password, but not in my typical PST that I don't want to password protect. And the method to do that
is actually just creating a brand new PST.
And then put a password on that one.
You have to specifically right-click on the PST file. There's an option that says change password, because you don't want it with the password that's associated with your regular user account.
Yeah.
If you change that particular password, and then you can have it separate when you start up Outlook, it'll ask you for that password. Or what you can do is just not automatically load it with Outlook.
Yeah.
So if you have it loaded, you can just right-click on it and say, closed file, and only use it when you actually need to, like if you're dragging and dropping from mails or if you have a rule or something.
Yeah.
And then only when you access it, it'll pop open a
It works wonderfully. Dialogue. I click it and just type my password in, then I can use it and then just shut Outlook and ask me for the password next time I need to use it. So it's a wonderful way to use it. And then the second one that I had is I have like some backup drives hooked up on my machine. But there's a little OCD thing maybe that's going on where I don't want to see these drives when I open up Windows Explorer. And so I found this registry entry that you can use where you can, and I can tell you what KB it is. It's 555-438.
Or I can just search for it.
There you go. And you can use these different commands in here and just go into the registry and add it for the drive that you want to hide, and then you won't see it in Windows Explorer, but it's still available. You can just go up into the bar and type, S:, and it goes right to that drive. And so now I've still got my backup drive on my machine, but I don't have to see it all the time and feel like I have too many drives in there.
So, right. This should definitely be viewed as a means of decluttering. You know, as opposed to security.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's not a security thing. It's an OCD thing, I think, more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, some apps will completely ignore this and will enumerate the drives regardless. Command prompt will open it up. You can open it up in computer management, the drive manager. So yeah, it's really just for folks like you that might have numerous drives kicking around that's attached. You partition your drives, I take it. That's why you have so many drive letters. Or do you just have
multiple drives? No, I have a bunch of drives plugged in.
Plugged in,
so
okay.
A bunch of 4 terabyte drives. And it's like the backup drives and some of the others I just stick stuff on, some of the scratch drives, like a SSD that I use for some things. I just don't want those showing up in Explorer, so I just like to have them hidden. What are you searching for, Gov?
Western Digital recently announced 10 terabyte drives.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
When's that happening?
I just heard about it yesterday. Yeah, here it is. From R. So when you're talking about your 4 terabyte, I'm thinking, what? Right? Because right now, 4 terabyte is pretty much the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
You know, and then...
It's the price point. It's the place to be right now is if you don't want to spend too much.
Right. Western Digital is introducing... helium-filled 10 terabyte drives.
All right.
It is really rather impressive. I mean,
that's nice. That's about the size that I could use. That would be.
If I upgraded
awesome.
My storage server with these, man.
Yeah.
It would be yummy.
Yeah, I was looking. I've got a box of old hard drives in my house, and I was thinking if I could just take all of those and hook them up to my DVR, I would have like my own private Netflix. Over the course of a couple months.
Well, if you had all of those old drives in external cases.
Yeah.
You can hook it up and use Windows storage spaces.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It would just be very power inefficient is what it would be.
Exactly.
Because you'd be hooking up I'm assuming these are what, 3.5-inch drives? Yeah, so I mean, AC power brick for each and every one of those.
Yeah.
It just becomes very power hungry and outputting a fair amount of heat at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Really, if you're gonna do that, or if I had a whole bunch of those drives, like what's the smallest drive that you've got?
500 gig. Yeah.
Okay. So if you had, and how many of those? Or
Five or seven. There's some 750s, there's some 1 terabytes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it gets to the point anymore, if it's less than 2 terabyte, it just sits in a box.
See, that's interesting. I would honestly just get a stored server chassis,
mm-hmm.
Maybe a 16-bay server, and what it would be is just hooked up via either USB or eSATA.
Yeah.
Probably eSATA is going to be your best one. Maybe Fiber Channel if you really wanted to go hardcore.
We talk about storage quite a bit on the
show. We do talk about storage, but I mean, I wouldn't want to see those drives in a box.
Yeah.
The other thing that I would do is, because I am much more of a kind soul, I think, than you are, I donate the drives. I try to, with all of your parts at home, try putting together systems and then donate them.
Donate me some of your drives. Let's see what happens with that.
Sure.
All right. Next question from Philip. Windows 10 blue screen, are these automatically sent back as part of the feedback for the review software?
All blue screens are. It doesn't matter which OS that you're on. We do get that information. We get mini dumps. And if it's something that we find is to be very interesting or we don't have enough, then we can request more information.
Mm-hmm.
But by default, we just get mini dumps of bug checks, which gets us enough information. It's usually what driver was it that caused it, you know, some minimal information. And then what we do is we just aggregate all that data. We figure out, well, how many people are hitting it, stack rank them, mm-hmm. right? And then go after the top hitters first.
Yeah, okay. From AN, he says, where can I get a step-by-step guide to deploy a Hyper-V VM Windows 10 through WinBoot?
Okay, so you're conflating a bunch of technologies. For one, a VM, Hyper-V VM, is a VHD or a VHDX. A WinBoot is actually a WIM file.
Yeah.
They are two separate things. So you're not going to do a Hyper-V boot off of a WIM file. And you can obviously boot off of a WIM file, you can boot off of a VHD, but they're two separate things.
Yeah.
The information about doing a VHD boot is out there. The information for doing a WIM boot, I believe, right now is targeted strictly for OEMs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm fairly certain that we've documented it.
Okay, well, we'll link to those in the show notes. From Robbie, I saw a quick talk on Microsoft App Locker. Seems to be available only on servers with Windows 8.1 Enterprise. Do you think it'll ever be available in Windows 8.1 Pro?
I can safely say that it won't be available in Windows 8.1 Pro. Right now, it is strictly an enterprise technology. App Locker has to be managed.
And for people who don't know what App Locker is, give us a little debrief on that.
Oh, okay. So App Locker basically is a set of rules that's deployed by the enterprise. It says what applications are and are not allowed to run. So you can have blacklists, whitelists of executables, hashes, wildcard entries, so that you can have, you could say, I only want X, Y, and Z to run, or I only want to block X, Y, and Z, or I want to allow everything from Microsoft, from McAfee, from blah, de, blah, de, blah.
So is it primarily for a domain join machine?
It is only for a domain join machine.
Okay. All right, there you have it. Next question. Recently, I accidentally deleted one of the user path variables on my Windows 8, and unfortunately, now I have authorization issues with some of my programs. I've seen that in the web, it is often recommended that people restore the system to a prior date, but in my case, this will lead to a loss of several important programs that I've installed in the past few weeks. I was wondering then, is there a way to restore my path variables? I'm in dire need because it has really messed up my system.
There's no way to restore them. However, there is a way to potentially find out what they were. Actually, I did not want to go there. Properties. Advanced system settings. Environment variables. Okay, so here are your system variables and your user variables. The other place that you can see them is if you do a CMD and you type set. The thing that I am guessing that you're missing is something out of your path environment. So some application has added itself or should have added itself to the path, and then something happened to your system where it reset the path environment, or, I mean, it's entirely possible that it is some other environment variable, of course, mm-hmm. that's not in your path. There's no way to restore it. The best that you can do is either reinstall the application that set it in the first place,
yeah.
or if you have another machine that has the same application installed and works, you can go and compare the two environments and then copy over whatever is missing.
Okay, cool. All right, next question. I've been having a weird issue that's been going on for the past few months. Every time I boot my computer after it's been off for a few hours, it completely freezes with no mouse movement within 5 minutes. I reset the computer and it works perfectly until the computer's been off for a while and then I restart it again. I'm running Windows 8 and I reinstalled the OS and checked all my drivers. Any ideas?
The first thing that comes to mind is if there's something wrong with your clock, make sure that your time is set correctly. Is your hard drive thrashing when your mouse isn't responding? If this is a desktop, caps lock, num lock, do the numbers react? Mm-hmm. Can you ping it from another machine? Is your network responding? Other than that, I mean, it would really, you know, require some diagnostics to figure out what's going on. Check yeah. your event log while it is in this state. If you have to hard boot it, mm-hmm. after the hard boot, look at your event log and see if there's anything that's been logged there. Check your device manager, see if there's anything banged out. I mean, the drive might be going. Honestly, I couldn't tell you without looking at the machine some more.
Yeah.
But those are some things to take a look at. You don't want to reinstall because apparently reinstallation doesn't help. Mm-hmm. Are you installing drivers from, you know, a CD or something? Can you try not installing anything but just leave it with whatever Windows installs? The other possibility is actually a driver might be coming down from Windows Update that's actually causing this problem.
Yeah.
So if you rebuild your machine, disconnect it from the internet and see if it can actually function properly.
Okay.
Do you have anything plugged into the machine? External drives, mice, keyboards?
Unplug everything,
right? Because it could be one of your peripherals that's going bad. Mm-hmm. Or a cable for one of your peripherals that's going bad as
yeah.
well.
All right, next question. Hey guys, I've got a user who's experiencing issues reading text when on her browser. The text is too thin to read and appears kind of gray. Some text is fine, but most of it's really hard to read. Any idea how to fix this? She's on a Latitude E5440. So the first thing I would say is if you're talking about in a web browser, I would hit Control-0 just to make sure you're at 100% because you might have scaled the browser and that might be one of the issues. The second thing that I would check is right-click on the desktop properties and look at the screen resolution. Make sure you're at the same native resolution as whatever device you're on. Mm-hmm. Anything else other than that? Maybe check the video driver, upgrade that if it's out of date.
I would look at it a little bit more holistically. Is it only happening on one web page or all web pages? Mm-hmm. Does this person have general vision issues, right? The other thing is that you can actually override what pages give you. If you go to Internet Options and you go to Fonts, something may have screwed up here. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that it is actually Latin-based, Times New Roman, Courier. The other thing to look at is your colors. Make sure that it's using Windows colors. And under Accessibility, you can actually start ignoring some things and define your own user style sheet if you wanted to override what websites are doing.
Yeah.
If you've gone through all of that and it's still not looking correct, is it those same websites on a different machine look correct, mm-hmm. look proper? Make sure that you clear your cache. Does it do anything different in a different browser? If you're on a 0.1, switch to the modern IE
yeah.
and see if there's any difference there going to the same website. And then come back to us with some information.
Cool, okay. All right, next question. Sometimes I have several applications open that are playing audio. Is there a way to list all the applications that are using audio within Windows.
Yes.
The volume mixer, I would assume.
If I had, say, IE that was running sound, flash sound or whatever, IE would show up here.
All if you had Skype or something, you'd see that there. So all the applications should be listed there.
Yep.
In a normal setting. All right, tips and tricks time. Gove's got a trick he wants to show us. What do you got, Gove?
Okay, so let's say that you're on a machine and you're outputting audio through HDMI.
Yeah.
And you also want to have it hooked up to, say, Bluetooth speakers or the output to your regular speakers. Mm-hmm. Now, normally, if you say you're watching a movie or something, you can't output both at the same time.
Yeah.
But Windows has an interesting little trick. If you open up the recording devices, and if you right-click and you show disabled devices, you'll get this thing called Stereo Mix. Now, if you don't see Stereo Mix, not all drivers have it, but go and find the specific driver for your system, not necessarily just the HD audio drivers that come with Windows, because our drivers don't actually have this one. Right-click on it, choose Enable, set as default device, right-click, go to Properties, choose Listen, listen to this device, and then you can choose your speakers as the other outputs audio source. So if I was outputting audio right now through HDMI or through DisplayPort in this case, I could set this and it would actually output audio to both at the same time.
Nice. And if you plug your headset in, you can listen with headphones too.
Exactly.
Very cool. Nice pick of the week time. And for the pick of the week, we want to talk about CES. So number one, before anything, I want to hear all your favorite things that you've seen from CES this year. So I've been watching, keeping an eye out. I haven't seen a ton of really interesting new gadgets and stuff. I have seen some. But I want to see what you guys think and what your favorite things have been this year. Now, a couple that stood out to us, talk about a couple of your favorites here. There's a new HP, two new HP devices that looked interesting.
Yeah, that is the HP Stream. Mm-hmm. These little bricks.
Yeah.
You know, with
like
full
ports. Like a
little
hockey puck kind of
exactly.
device.
Yeah, I mean, it's really easy if you want to create a kiosk or, you know, you want to just take your computer with you.
Yeah.
Low power.
There's two of them. One of them is very low specs, using the cloud as a storage, 200 gig of free storage for, that you get for 2 years. And then the other one's a little bit more robust. So it just depends on the application that you want to use it for. I could see one of those, like, you know, behind every TV in my house for the
exactly.
most part.
So. Yeah, it's kind of like the Intel NUC.
Yeah. And then another one that...
this is my favorite.
Yeah.
The Intel Compute Stick.
Yeah, I like that. I think this made an appearance at the end of Lucy.
Oh, really?
Bad movie, but...
this is very similar to the Android sticks that are there. You plug it directly to the HDMI port of your TV. But this is relatively high power. I mean, a quad core Atom, 2 gig of RAM, 32 gig of internal storage, micro SD.
And it is a computer. So
it's
this,
a full blown computer. Yeah.
When we were talking about earlier, I called it like Windows to go without needing a PC.
Right.
So you just plug this thing into a screen.
It does require USB power as well.
Yes. So this would let you do, like, you could take it with you and do demos, do presentation, and just, you know, plug it into a screen. Then we use Bluetooth
keyboard
controls.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I would use.
Yeah. Very cool.
This is my other pick of the week. It's the HP Stream 7. 7-inch Atom device, quad-core Atom. Mm-hmm. Less than $100. With case, it was
that
like...
That is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 1 gig RAM, 32 gig eMMC system, but it is fast. Like, I'm really rather surprised at how fast it is.
So, very snappy and
very snappy.
Responsive.
Extremely snappy and responsive, more than I was expecting, frankly.
Yeah.
Especially
and
for a 1 gig
Did it come with
system.
The case?
No, it did not come with a case. The case was $12 off Amazon.
Not bad.
No ports, practically. I mean, one shared USB OTG port. So if you plug in a converter to a full-size
dongle thing.
Little dongle thing, which I've yet to find a use for. I just charge from it anyways.
Yeah.
Headphone jack, power and volume, and external speakers. And the external speakers, you know, they're not great, but they're not bad either.
Yeah.
Front and back cameras, again, you know, nothing to write home about, but if you want to Skype,
you
can Skype.
What do you want?
Yeah, this is what
it's
I use on the
bus. Cheaper than like a little point and shoot camera.
This with a Miracast dongle, when I go traveling, is plug that into a screen, Miracast on this, off of Wi-Fi, you can stream Netflix and Hulu. I have had zero problems with it. It's fast, no choppiness whatsoever. Which
very
I was
nice.
Very surprised at.
Very cool.
And this is, I mean, practically disposable.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what I was really impressed at.
Yeah.
I thought about giving it to my kid, who's not even 2 years old yet, and it's like, no, actually, I want this.
Nice. So let us know what you've seen so far this year from CES and what your favorite things are, and we will see you next week.
Take care.